He didn't have it easy growing up, and he got a late start in basketball too, but here he is, establishing himself in the NBA. Growing up in Washington, D.C. and Maryland, his first love was football. He didn't begin playing basketball until the ninth grade, and wound up leading his team to two state championships and earning a scholarship to Pitt. He was the second-round draft choice of Memphis and played a major role in the greatest playoff moment in that franchise's history. An injury led to his release, and after a stop in Philadelphia, he's now an important backup player with the Pacers. He had plenty of people to draw inspiration from, including a blind younger brother who kept him grounded. And he's got more going for himself than you might assume. He might be a bruiser on the court, but he's got an artistic side off of it. Let's get to know him. I'm Mark Monteith, and I'm going one-on-one with Sam Young.
This is One-on-One with Mark Monteith on 1070 The Fan. Brought to you by Georgetown Market, Indy's family-owned natural food store since 1973. Movie Time Video Productions. They make your memories last forever. And Robin Run Village, Central Indiana's finest continuing care retirement community.
All right, today's one-on-one comes to you from Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and we are here with Sam Young, a really important backup member of the Indiana Pacers and a guy with a really fascinating story. And Sam, I know you were born in Washington, D.C., but you grew up in Maryland. How long were you in D.C.?
I was in D.C. until middle school.
Middle school.
After middle school, my family, my mother got a better job, and we started to move further and further out.
What did your mom do?
She was a telephone, cable, and internet technician.
Technician?
Yes. Yeah, so okay. She would go to your house and hook up your internet and set up the cable and stuff like that.
Ah, she was making the house calls, huh? Yeah, okay. Exactly. And I know you have a brother. Is it just you and your brother, or are there more in the family?
No, it was me and my brother and my three sisters.
Three sisters, so five kids. Okay. Is your dad in the picture at this time? Is he with the family, or?
Yeah, but he never lived with us.
Okay.
But he was always on the outside.
Where does your athleticism come from? Was your dad an athlete, or is there some bloodlines here that helped you?
If my father was an athlete, I haven't seen it. But my mother used to run track, and she said, I get my athletic ability from her, but who knows?
Okay.
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? Your brother's interesting because he's blind, right?
Yeah.
Was he blind from birth?
No, he was born. He was born with cataracts, I think, around his 11th birthday. He had surgery. He had a bad eye and a good eye, and he had surgery on his bad eye. And when he had on his good eye. And when he had the surgery, a couple of days later, he went swimming. And he wasn't supposed to, but he was at a school for the blind, and he went swimming, and one of the kids poked him in his eye. It completely went. He went blind instantly.
Wow.
Yeah, so after he went blind instantly in his good eye, it was so much trauma that his bad eye kind of just went out and just took the bad eye with him. So from that point on, he was blind, but he was always preparing for that day. That the possibility. So he was taking Braille and doing different things and walking with the cane and stuff like that. So he kind of adjusted pretty well, but it was tough.
Yeah. But he was an athlete, right?
Yeah.
I saw he was a gold medalist in judo in the Blind Sports Federation 2007, and he also wrestled.
Exactly. and it's funny because when I went out to Pitt, every summer I would come back home. Obviously, I didn't really have no time to spend with none of my family. But when I would come back home, each year he would get bigger and bigger, stronger and stronger. Like, and sometimes for like workouts, I would just wrestle him. And a couple of times he'd pin me down and he'd get me. He'd be so strong and he'd pin you down and he'd get you in these awkward positions where you gotta give up, or you gonna take advantage of
it. Yeah. So is he older than you?
No, he's younger.
Younger. Okay.
Yeah, he's right now he's 24.
But did you draw inspiration from him as an athlete?
Yeah, as an athlete and as a human being, because man, everybody has a story. Just watching his story and looking at it and kind of just looking at him. Sometimes I would come home and I would sit and I just talk to him, you know, and they'd tell me about how I feel to not be able to see when he once could have, you know, because he still remembers colors and he still remembers things like people's faces and stuff like that. But now he's like, he had it before and now it's taken away from him. So it's kind of tough, and for him to reflect on it, it just give me like motivation and kind of like makes me feel like anybody could have been in that position. Like I could have been in that situation. That's my brother. He's the closest person to me and he's in that position. So that could have been me.
So he's really never seen you play basketball, has he?
No.
Yeah, I guess he's a couple years younger. Uh-huh. I guess what, he would listen to games on the radio or whatever? Yeah, do you try to describe what it's like? Or
he listened to all the games. He even talked trash, too. Yeah, he'd be like, I see you missed those free throws. I see you ain't get off the bench today. He always talking trash, you know. He always got, you know, some slick to say. Yeah, even though he lost his vision, he's still real outgoing, still real outspoken, you know. He's not afraid to speak his mind and say what he feels and stuff like that. So he's not a shy person at all.
So he wasn't really bitter about the experience of going blind?
He was bitter, but he got over it fast, you know. It was just like, I can't worry about it all my life. I still got a life to live. Mm-hmm. And he's living it. Like, my mother still sometimes she gets worried about him. Like, he'll, just like a couple years ago, a few years ago, he'll get up and my mother knows he's home. He'll get up and get on a bus and go somewhere. And my mother be running around the house looking for him, trying to figure out where he went at. Like, Mom, I'm grown. I can get on the bus and I can leave if I want. Like, it doesn't matter just because I'm blind, you know? So he's a free spirit.
What does he do now?
He's back in school at Frostburg University. He has a girlfriend, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's living.
Yeah, so he's able to be independent and
yeah.
I guess he's a student now, but he'll be able to support himself. What is he studying? What does he want to do?
He wants to do something with French. I know he wants to be a translator.
Yeah. A French translator?
Yeah.
Wow. Where did that come from?
I have no idea. I don't be home often. So when I come home, I notice different changes. And I came home one year and he was speaking French. And I had no idea. And he has a CNI dog. Mm-hmm. And he actually speaks French to the CNI dog and the dog understands it.
So interesting.
It's crazy.
Has he ever gone to one of your NBA games just to sit in the audience and experience
yeah.
it?
Yeah. He's been to a couple games. He's been to a couple pit games too. He's sitting there just listening. And my mom sat beside me and asked my mom what's going on and stuff like that.
So your family moved 9 times before you got to college. How do you reflect on your childhood now? Was it difficult? Was it great? What was it like?
It was both.
Mm-hmm.
It was bittersweet, you know. As a child, you don't really understand to the extent how much, you know, moving to different areas. You just think, you know, just that's what people do. You know, as a child, you don't really understand it. But as you get older, you realize that we moved a lot when I was younger. Yeah. And I met a lot of people, gained a lot of experiences. I think one of the places that I moved, the whole area was real big on sports, and that's kind of what got me into playing sports and stuff like that, because growing up in the house, it was me, my mother, and my brother, he's blind, and my 3 other sisters, you know, so it's pretty much all girls and my brother. So there wasn't nobody encouraging sports or encouraging basketball or football or stuff like that. So when I moved to that one particular area, football was, everybody's crazy about football. And that's what, I was a football guy initially, and I love playing football all day, every day. I used to always say I'm gonna play for the Redskins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're right there in Maryland, near Washington D.C.
Uh-huh.
Did you play high school football?
I did. I played high school football. I transferred my 9th grade year. I played my 10th grade year. I transferred to a school, and I always wanted to play basketball. And when I was a football guy, I always wanted to play basketball. So when I transferred, I met the basketball coach. I transferred like kind of in the middle of the year, so I missed that football season. But I was able to get with the basketball coach and play basketball that year. And the following year, I couldn't play football again because I went to the All-American Nike camp. After that year, I was 2 years out of football. And then I went to the Nike camp, and it kind of like basketball just kind of took off so fast that I never looked back.
Young flips for basketball when one-on-one continues. But first, here he is, playing for Memphis in a second-round playoff series against Oklahoma City 2 years ago, getting his defender in the air and finishing with authority.
Gets it out to Battier, and now Young driving in with the stop! That'll get this place going, and a timeout by OKC.
Welcome back to One on One. I'm Mark Monteith, spending an hour with Pacers forward Sam Young. He can still do backflips, and his first sport was football. But he found his way to basketball as a ninth grader, and he made himself a player with a work ethic that took root at home.
So what was your first year of organized basketball? You're a ninth grader or 10th grader?
Ninth grade.
But you hadn't played much until then, right?
No, my first year playing ever was ninth grade. Yeah, so when I transferred to the new school in the 10th grade, it was kind of like I had 1 year under my belt, but I was kind of picking it up fast.
I was curious, though, how'd that first year go as a ninth grader when you hadn't played? It must have been a struggle, huh?
Oh, that first year was crazy because I didn't know anything about basketball. It wasn't like I was growing up as a student of the game, you know, or had people in my corner that was basketball fanatics and stuff like that. I mean, just the neighborhood alone got me into football, but outside of that, that's all I knew. But when I first started playing basketball, it was kind of like I would do the craziest things. but I didn't know. I had no clue what 3 seconds was. So I would just stand in the lane like all day, like, give me the ball. And they're like, you got to get out the lane. And they called it on me about 3 or 4 times before I kind of got it, you know, or like 5 seconds. Or like, I mean, all the little rules in basketball that like you would take for granted that you would think somebody was supposed to know. Like, I didn't know any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask if you had any embarrassing moments. Did anything come to mind like that happened in the game or even in practice that was embarrassing because you didn't know better?
Yes, I do. I have one. You know, at the half, you know, you switch baskets. I wasn't aware that at the half you switch baskets. So we got the ball at the half. I don't know what happened, but I got the ball. I remember running down to the wrong end of the basket, and I dunked the ball so hard and like celebrating, and everybody was looking at me like I was crazy. Like, that was probably one of the most embarrassing moments.
Dunked at the wrong end.
Yeah.
You're not the first guy I've talked to who shot at the wrong basket, so
yeah.
Feel okay about that. But you said you played football, but you also got into gymnastics at an early age?
When I was young, I'm going to say like 5 or 6, just doing backflips. And like, even in all my neighborhoods I ever lived in, it was somebody out there that knew how to like flip. And it's just like a thing that we did. And I just kind of got into it. And like, it was like 1 or 2 years where I took some summer classes, gymnastic classes at UDC in DC. And I would catch the train. That's my first time learning how to catch the train. I would catch the train out there and learned a couple of things. And I mean, it just kind of stuck. Like, even to this day, I can still do all the stuff I used to.
I was going to ask, you can do a backflip today, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Right. Have you done it yet here for your teammates to show them?
Yeah, they know. Yeah, they know.
That's, you know, for a guy your size, that's pretty unusual, I think.
Yeah, no. I used to always say, man, if I wanted to, I could have went to the Olympics. But now that I've seen how tall I've gotten, I don't know if it was any guys my height that's in the Olympics. That's a little crazy.
Probably not. Probably not. By the way, what position were you in football when you played at school?
I played wide receiver, tight end.
Yeah, I can see you as a tight end.
Yeah.
And you led your high school basketball team to state championships, correct?
Yeah.
As a junior and senior?
Uh-huh.
Take me back to that. What do you remember from those championships and those games? What stands out today?
I remember thinking I was pretty good in high school, like in the 10th grade, going to that All-American Nike camp and thinking I wasn't that good. I came back home and I just started working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of big names at that All-American Nike camp.
Yeah, the best players from the country at that Nike camp. Yeah,
I remember coming back from that camp thinking that I need to work.
Yeah, so we're going to the camp, you thought you were pretty good, but coming out of the camp, you realized you had a long way to go.
I had a long way to go. So I came back home and I worked. And I feel like two reasons. Like, I feel like I was never the guy that was a no-brainer pick that, oh, you should see Sam Young. But I feel like I never was successful because of that, but I was always successful because of how hard I worked. So I felt like if I can utilize my work ethic to learn all the, because I feel like I learned a lot when I was there, and if I can utilize my work ethic and learn like a lot of the things that I've seen guys do, and a lot of guys my height, and that's another thing. When I was in high school, I played like the 4 and the 5, and then when I went to the Nike camp, a lot of guys my height was playing the 3 and the 2. And even a point, you know? So I feel like I had a lot to learn, and I learned a lot from those guys. And I came back home and I just worked. And going into my junior year, that summer, I had a crazy summer. I had a nice summer. Right after the Nike camp, I came back home and I just started working. And I feel like the end of that summer was a great summer. And going into my 11th grade year, I just kind of took off.
Yeah, and you went to Friendly High School?
Uh-huh.
Is that named after somebody?
I don't think so.
Just a Friendly High School.
Yeah.
Huh? Exactly. Was it a good place to go? Was it a good high school to go to?
I mean, I love my coach, you know. God rest his soul. He passed a few years ago. But I love my coach. He was a great coach. He taught us a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like who he was is kind of a reflection of who I am and the kind of basketball player I am. Like, just a hard-nosed kind of guy, you know.
Mm-hmm. What was his name?
Gerald Moore.
Gerald Moore?
Yeah.
You obviously have a work ethic. You know, you're a blue-collar kind of player. Where does that approach come from?
I think the approach comes from, like, the past. Seeing the struggle, being a part of the struggle. I know how hard it is. Watching my mom struggle growing up, you know, raising 5 kids, you know, and her coming home late at night and leaving early in the morning. In the beginning, you know, and my mom was real tough on us in the beginning, I kind of felt like she was just mean or being extra or doing the most. But after you grow up and you kind of see how it is and what life is, and you can see how she was trying to bring the best out of me. Mm-hmm. and my brothers and sisters. So after I got to of age where I can understand that, I felt like I was obligated to be something or to do something positive. Once I got that opportunity, once basketball became an opportunity where I could see myself taking off and see myself, envision myself going farther and farther with this basketball, I felt like I couldn't let that opportunity go to the wayside.
So you're the oldest, right, of 5 kids?
Exactly.
So you got 3 younger sisters and a younger brother who's blind. You must have had a lot of responsibility around the house, right?
Exactly.
What was it like for you?
It was tough because all of us are tough kids and young, tough-minded, you know. Even if we was young, we was like tough-minded and we was real opinionated, you know. So, you know, I got to see my mother going to work and then come home at night and then going to work early and come home at night. And I was going to practice after school, but even after practice, I'd still be my mom home. So sometimes my mother get home and house might not be as clean as she would like, or, you know, something that happened and she felt like I should have been more responsible. Not far as my individual self, but far as the older brother for the younger kids, you know. And I felt like it was kind of rough, you know. Me and my mom, we sometimes bump heads, or me and my younger sisters and sometimes bump heads. But it was just an experience, and I think every family go through it, and I think this is one of the things that makes a family more together and tougher.
Did you have to, like, make meals and do stuff like that and, you know, look after your younger sisters?
Sometimes I'll make meals, but I don't think my sisters like my cooking that much. So they learned how to cook really fast.
You inspired them in your own way.
I kind of inspired them to learn how to do their own thing. I don't think they like my cooking that much. I got better, though. I'm better now, but back then I think I was a little rough around the edges while I was cooking.
The state championships, did you play well in the championship games? Are those good memories? Obviously, they're good memories, but you know, for you personally?
It was great memories. Like my first year, I still remember this, and I still remember my coach saying that I shot 11 for 13 from the field in the state championship game.
Your junior year?
My junior year. But I still, like, wasn't a student of the game. Like, I was, like, becoming. And my coach looked at the stat sheet, and he looked at me, he said, "You don't even know what you just did, did you? You don't even have a clue of what you just did. Like, this is history numbers right here." But he was like, kind of in a joking way, but like with seriousness in it, he was just like, "Man, you can be something special. You know, you can be one of the people that can do something special coming out of this high school."
Yeah. So then again, your senior year, you guys went from 3A to 4A, and you won it again.
Uh-huh.
Did you play well in that game too, final game?
Yeah, I played great in that game too. But we had a guy on our team, Lloyd Phillips, he played excellent. I think he had 35 in that game. So I had like 23 or 24, but he went off. He's a three-point shooter, and he was just hitting everything.
Yeah, whatever happened to him?
He went to Illinois State.
Mm-hmm.
And now he plays overseas.
Yeah. Okay, and you went to Pitt. Tell me about your recruiting experience. Where else did you visit, and why Pitt?
I feel like coming out of high school, my grades weren't the best. My SAT score was non-existent because I didn't take it.
Oh, you didn't take it?
No, I didn't take it, so it was non-existent. I mean, coming out of Friendly High School, my SAT score was non-existent, and my grades wasn't the best. So, even though I was playing good and the team was winning and we won championships, you know, that wasn't enough. Like, I had to academically get my stuff together so I can be college ready. But I feel like Pitt, they came to see me after my junior year. After that year, I feel like on a consistent basis, you know, I just heard from them, or I got a package in the mail or some type of letter. Just letting them know that they was interested, letting me know that they were still interested. And after my senior year, I still ain't take the SAT. My grades were still shaky. So I decided I was gonna go to Hargrave Military Academy. And the word got out that I was going to Hargrave Military Academy. All these schools just start like coming from everywhere. But I felt like Pitt was the first school and it was the most consistent school. And like I said before, I had no clue of college basketball, so I still was like unaware of like which school is the best school. But everybody was telling me like, yeah, you need to go to Pitt. Like, Pitt is a good school. When I went on my visit, that was my first visit. When I went on my visit, Pitt had played some team. I can't think of the name who they played, but I went to that football game. That was my first college experience ever. I mean, it was just so much. I was like, you know what? This is where I want to be. I didn't take no more visits.
Young heads off to military school and learns to love it when one-on-one continues. But first, here he is, dropping a three-pointer for the Pacers earlier this season.
Splits the defense, and here's a three from Young.
Yeah, Carlisle's got to take a timeout. The Pacers have found some offensive rhythm. Much little used Sam Young, it's actually had a big impact on this game.
Back on One-on-One, Mark Monteith here, talking with Pacers forward Sam Young. He had to go to a military academy for a year to get his grades in order before attending college. Those 6 a.m. wake-up calls and all that marching didn't appeal to him at first, but looking back on it all now, it helped him get to where he is today. You were at the military institute for 1 year?
Yeah, 1 year.
Did that help you? Was that a good experience?
At the time, no. But after the fact, yes.
Looking back on it now?
Yeah, after the fact, it was a great experience. But at the time, I hated it.
Yeah.
It was 9 months, you know, and then it was kind of like at my high school, we had a lot of freedom, you know, friendly. You know, we had a lot of freedom to kind of relax a little, you know.
It's just a friendly place.
Yeah, it's a friendly place. But at Hargrave Military Academy, it's all business and no play.
And making you get up early?
Yeah, we had to get up 6 o'clock in the morning. We had to march to breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Had to wear uniform. 9 months, no females in sight. No TV, no cell phone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a tough place. It was a tough place. And I felt like I was going to quit a couple of times. I managed to keep my composure. But once I held on and managed to graduate and get out of that place, I was like, there's no way I'm not going to go to the NBA, because like, this is the ultimate experience. Like,
yeah.
this experience right here prepared me for everything, because I feel like I've never been in a situation like that, and never was I able to, on a consistent basis, maintain my composure from all the adversity that came my way. Like, it was just tough the whole time, and mm-hmm. the whole time, like, I found out who I was as a person going through Hargrave Military Academy.
Yeah. Was the basketball good there?
Oh, yeah.
You played on the basketball team.
And we was great. I mean, basketball was the best part of it. I mean, we was number two in the nation. I was prep school player of the year, you know. But everything outside of basketball was rough. Everything other than basketball was rough. But my first year at Pittsburgh, I came into Pittsburgh. And the thing is, it's crazy because I never made no type of honor roll or nothing like that all through high school. I left Hargrave Military Academy, first years at Pittsburgh, dean's list, you know? It was crazy. Like,
yeah.
Because it was the structure that I had at Hargrave Military Academy that prepared me so much. When I got to Pittsburgh, I didn't go out at all, because I didn't even feel like I needed to. Or I didn't. Mm-hmm. I wasn't amped up to. I was just happy to not feel like I was locked up.
Yeah, you felt free just being out of the...
I felt free just being out of that place.
Must have felt like a playground on Pitt's campus, you know, with all that freedom and
exactly
getting up at a reasonable hour and everything. Uh-huh.
Man, they would get up when I want or go to sleep when I want, you know.
Yeah.
That was enough for me.
You know, David West went to a military academy for a year or two.
Yeah,
so
he told me.
Yeah, so you are the two guys on this team who had that experience, and probably no coincidence you're like the blue-collar guys on the team, too. So I can see how that connects. So you go through Pitt. You have a great career at Pitt. You are a second-round draft pick by Memphis in 2009. You're the 36th pick of the draft. Is that kind of where you were expecting to go in the draft? Did it go pretty much as you thought it would, or were you surprised by anything?
During the draft, I felt like I was going to go higher in the draft, but I wasn't at all frustrated or upset.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like I had something to prove.
Yeah, but did you think you might go in the first round?
Yeah, sure.
Really?
I mean, my whole pre-draft prep was based on me going first round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything was based on me going first round. The agents I picked and everything else. Like, but I don't know. I mean, that night, you never know. Like, things come up and situations happen. And the thing is, I had really good workouts with teams. All my workouts was great. So I knew I was going to go first round, but it didn't happen that way, you know?
So you were disappointed on draft day?
I was disappointed, but I was like, I'm going with the mindset that I'm going to prove people wrong.
Where did you watch the draft from? Were you home or?
I was in Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
My cousin's house.
Okay. Yeah. So you're just sitting there, it goes through the first round, and you keep thinking your name's going to be called.
Yeah, I'm just sitting on the couch, and then, like, you know, sometimes when you when you're going through a tough situation, you just kind of want silence and quiet. And I'm sitting there and I'm like thinking to myself, I didn't get called yet. I can't believe it. Like, and my cousin just keeps talking, you know, and I'm trying to like zone him out, but I can't. It's tough because I'm so like frustrated or so like unaware. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like the teams that's coming up, I ain't work out from Memphis either. Mm-hmm. You know, so I didn't have no idea that Memphis was gonna pick me. So at this point, like the teams coming up, I haven't worked out for them because I thought I was going first round.
So you go there without a guaranteed contract, I take it, right? The contract you signed was probably not guaranteed. And then your second year there, though, you wind up starting 46 games. Memphis goes 30-16 in those games. You're averaging just under 10 points. You're shooting about 50%. And then in the playoffs, Memphis is the eighth seed, and you upset San Antonio, which is the number one seed in the first round. And you had 17 points in game two. You had 18 points in game five. You know, so that's kind of where you proved yourself, isn't it? Well, hello, Gerald Green. Okay, that's Phil. Okay. You're next. You're next on this show now. That's good radio right there.
Oh, man.
The playoff, though, experience your second year with Memphis was...
Yeah, it was a situation where I feel like I got an opportunity. I was getting, pushed by the coaches and the players was letting me know that, like, it was my time. And I took on the challenge, and we made history on Memphis.
Given that experience, you know, you start in the playoffs, you upset the number one seed, you play Oklahoma City well in the second round of the playoffs. Are you kind of surprised the way things have gone since then? You know, you wind up getting traded to Philadelphia, and, you know, and then you wind up coming here as a free agent, that yeah. type of thing? Because I would think at that point you thought, hey, I've established myself here now.
Yeah, it's crazy how the league is, and it's crazy how, like, situations change for the good and the bad, but coming into Memphis the following year, I had a real bad ankle sprain. I twisted my ankle, and it kind of like slowed me down a whole lot. And even sometimes today, I feel like little twitches and stuff on my ankle. But it's just, it's crazy how like you can, because I never got hurt before. Like, I never been hurt or never was injury prone. But it's crazy how like one injury can kind of like throw you off. How big it could be. After that ankle sprain, I tried to come back, and I think I tried to come back too soon, and I had the ankle sprain during the lockout, so I wasn't able to contact anybody or get any kind of assistance on how should I go about doing it, and the ankle just got super fat, and I was icing it, but I think I needed more than just ice. I think I needed some treatment and some medical attention. So after that, it was just kind of like I came in during the season. I tried to play the first couple of days. I came back and it didn't feel right. So I set out that training camp. I tried to come back probably a few games into the season. It still ain't feel right, and after a while, it started getting better, but it's kind of like, even though my ankle got better, I was still out of sync, you know? I just had too much time off. So, once you have so much time off, the team becomes a different team, you know? They still growing, and I'm still standing in one spot, you know? So, it was just a tricky situation, and it happens like this.
And even this year, you come to the Pacers this year, you sprain your ankle. Mm-hmm. In December, so they let you go for a while because they just have another capable body here.
Yeah,
brought in Dominic McGuire, but you knew you were coming back all along, right?
Yeah.
But what was that like being away for a couple of weeks?
It was crazy. I mean, even though I knew I was coming back, it was still like crazy because it was kind of like sometimes I'll be somewhere and I'll go grab a bite to eat. And the game would be on. I watched the game at the bar, and I'm like, "Well, I watched the game at just anywhere, like at a restaurant." And it's like, "Oh, I'm supposed to be there. I'm supposed to be right there, and I'm watching the game at a restaurant." And it was like, it was just different. It was awkward
because you're on the team, but you're not on the team at that particular moment.
I'm on the team, but I'm not on the team. It's like I came to the games, and I come to the games, and I was sitting in the stands. Like, my mom would be up there in the student section. I mean, family section.
Yeah,
and I go up there and I sit in the stands with her and watch the game, and does this feel funny just being in the stands or being on the outside looking in, you know?
She still work?
No.
You've been able to retire her?
Yes.
I'm guessing that was a happy day for you when you were able to take her off working and,
yeah, of course,
you know, give her a retirement plan.
I think that's every child's dream, is to make sure that their mother or their parents or whoever the guardian was or is has been taken care of.
Young's more than a basketball player. He's a piano player and a poet as well. He'll discuss when one-on-one continues. But first, here he is with another shot fake, field goal, and foul earlier this season with the Pacers.
Sam Young, the shot fake. Got to the hoop. Basket and a foul.
Yeah, Sam Young has played really well.
We're back on One-on-One. Mark Monteith here with Pacers forward Sam Young. He's got more going for him than basketball. He's an accomplished piano player and has written hundreds of poems. And now he puts many of his thoughts on Twitter.
You are a piano player. I wish we had a keyboard here so we could show off your skills, but I keep hearing about this. Are you self-taught? You just play by ear, or have you been trained?
It's kind of like a little bit of both, but I'm probably a little rusty now. But growing up, my brother, like I said, was blind. And one of the things that he used to do is play the piano. So once his grandmother kind of got him into playing piano, I would just sit and watch him play, and then I would play sometimes with him. And then when I got to high school, in my ninth grade year, I took some piano classes, and which taught me the basics. And with the basics, you can kind of navigate and like do your own thing. And once you can read a little bit of music and understand like how, what is the A sound, or what is the B sound, or C, you can kind of listen to a song and then know what the key, what key is in. You know? And then after that, you pretty much kind of go on your own, and that's kind of what I did.
Yeah. Do you have a keyboard at your apartment now? Do you still play some? Or?
You know what? I had a keyboard at home this summer. My brother left. He stole it. So I don't have my keyboard with me right now. I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to steal it back.
Okay. Do you mostly just play by ear, or do you just read music when you play? Or
I play by ear, and then I have a lot of songs I know about memory. But he's a lot better than me. My brother's a lot better than me. He can play everything, anything. He can hear stuff and just write then and there, just go to work, you know.
And you also write poetry.
Yeah.
Where did that start?
Man, just growing up, like things that happen on a normal day or everyday life, I just kind of sit back and write about it. Then I start putting it into a form of poetry. And I always feel like I can, it just came natural for me to put up words to flow, you know, while I'm trying to get off my points.
You ever had anything published, or have you collected them into a?
Yeah, I got so many pieces of poetry, and I got everything just right on a laptop. And one day, I want to take everything and make a book. Right now, I'm just kind of like just building it up, pretty much. Even though I feel like I got enough right now to have a book, but I don't know why I'm holding on to it.
So, but when you write poetry, what do you write about generally? Is there a theme to it?
Different things. I write about the struggle growing up, how overcame the odds, how what I've learned in this life, love, relationships, you know, the normal.
If we're a blue-collar athlete, you're a pretty sensitive guy, or kind of artistic guy, aren't you? Yeah. Seems like you got a couple sides to your personality.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, I'm like a chameleon. Yeah. I'm like a chameleon. I got a few different sides for you, you know.
And that's also apparent on your Twitter account. People go to @SamYoung4. You know, you put things on there occasionally that are thought-provoking or, you know, not the usual things. You know, like, why is it so hard to see the value of something or someone until it's gone? How come the person that impacts your heart the most is the most dangerous for your heart? Things like that. So you kind of use Twitter as a way to express yourself, don't
you? Exactly. And the thing is, I use Twitter a lot because you always get feedback from the followers, you know? And it's always a good, like, you can write it in the book or in the pad all day, but you'll never get feedback. You know, when you write it on Twitter, you get feedback and you get people that probably have different perspectives or opinions that you do, but they'll be able to, you know, articulate different things and maybe change your mindset or change the way you was initially thinking about it. I had this one event that I came up with where, like, I invited people over, and this was in Memphis. I would invite people over and we'd have like hundreds of questions, like thought-provoking questions that get people to engage in conversations and stuff, throw them in a basket, and then like have catered food and stuff like that. And once everybody kind of sitting down and relaxed and comfortable, we'll have a host that pulls the questions out of the basket and reads the questions off, and then everybody kind of like share their opinion or perspective on the topic. It's kind of a cool like event that I did, and sometimes I just kind of do it on Twitter.
When you were at Pitt, I read that you slept in the practice facility for like a month just so you could be there to work out every day.
Yeah.
Took that approach?
Yeah. Because I felt like once upon a time, I never got here off just being a no-brainer athlete or a no-brainer talent, but strictly off my work ethic and my persistence. So at that time, I felt like I had a situation, and in my situation, like, it was starting to fall. I was starting to miss shots, starting to turn the ball over a little more than I would like. And I was like, this opportunity is too close for me to allow it to slip away, you know? So I would work out at night, I would take a shower, wake up in the morning, work out, take a shower, go to class, go to practice, go home for a little bit, and do whatever I need to do, change the clothes or whatever. Go back to the gym, work out, take a shower, go to sleep, wake up, work out, take a shower, go to class, go to practice. And it was like, I felt like it was, I had in my mind that it was another form of Hargrave Military Academy.
Yeah, just kind of follow that routine, right? Yeah. Nothing but work and eat and study.
Exactly.
Nothing else.
Exactly.
So what do you do now in your free time? Certain things you read or movies that you watch or whatever? I mean, because you're an athlete, but as we know, you're also kind of an artistic type of guy. What do you do with your free time?
I try to conquer everything. Every sport, last night I went bowling. Like, even we had a late practice, and right after practice, I went to Latitude 39 and played a couple of frames of bowling. I know we got the bowling event coming up on the 24th, so I want to kill everybody.
You know? You mean a team bowling event?
Yeah, the team bowling event.
So you're preparing?
Yeah, I'm preparing. I'm going to kill everybody. I got it. I bowled a 199 last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that your best score?
Last night, that was my best score.
Okay. Now, Paul George tells me he has bowled over 200 before, so you better keep an eye on him.
I got a 205 before, but...
Yeah. Okay.
I'm be ready for PG.
Okay. One more thing. I've asked everybody this question. When you dream at night, when you're sleeping and you dream at night, do you dream about basketball, about playing basketball, or any aspect of basketball, or is it other stuff?
I think it's about everything. I think I'm so, like, widespread. Like, my mind just wanders. Sometimes I'll dream about basketball. Sometimes I'll dream about where I'm going to be at in, like, the next 10 years. Like, how my family, like, I don't have any kids and stuff like that. Like, what would I be at, like, as a family man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All those different types of things. Like,
Man, my mind be all over the place.
But like even when you're sleeping, like when you sleep and you can't really control those dreams, do you?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm like sometimes I sleep, I be man, I dream about different moves I'll be doing when I'm in the game and stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah, I dream about. I think everybody had to dream about hitting the last shot.
You have those dreams. Do you usually play well in your basketball dreams when you're sleeping? Or do you struggle sometimes?
I don't know if anybody struggles in their basketball dream.
Oh, I've talked to people. Larry Bird said he usually plays bad in his dreams about playing. Yeah. No explanation for it, but.
I don't know why I play good in my dreams.
You play good in your dreams?
Yeah. And then I think it's the real life where I struggle.
What do you see yourself doing after basketball?
You know, I ask myself that every day. Like, it's like so many things I want to do. Like I wish I could find something where I can be exposed to like kids and be able to help kids and stuff like that. Like I even thought about like just being a regular teacher or something just simple, you know, and just live like a regular life. Like I even think that would be interesting than like doing something crazy or coaching it. Like, cause I feel like when you're coaching, you're still living the lifestyle. You still haven't settled down as a coach because you're still traveling. You still got that schedule where you're going from place to place to place, come home, then going back, then come home, then going back. It's not a normal lifestyle, you know? So, like, when I finish playing basketball, I want to do something simple, something normal where I can just be home. I can get home at a reasonable hour every day, you know, and kind of just relax and sleep in my own bed every day. You know?
Yeah. So maybe coach and teach?
Yeah. That would be cool.
More with Sam Young when One-on-One continues. But first, here he is against the Knicks last week, getting a steal and a breakaway slam.
Not a starter on the floor. Stoudemire comes off the bench right now for the Knicks. And Young the steal. He's going to take it home.
You can see that. Oh, even Sam Young got a little show in the post.
Hey, thanks to Sam Young for supporting the One-on-One cause. Interesting guy, huh? Seems like he'd be as comfortable listening to poetry in a coffee house as he would be playing in a basketball game. He reminds me some of his teammate, David West, who also had to go to a military academy and also isn't afraid to show an artistic side. And he also reminds me some of next week's One-on-One guest, his rookie teammate, Orlando Johnson. He really had it tough growing up, but gained strength from everything that happened to him as a kid. That story, like this one, will be available by podcast on our website at 1070thefan.com. Click on shows, click on One-on-One, and click on the podcast link, and you can listen any hour of any day. You can always reach me by email at mark@1070thefan.com, and I'm available on Facebook and Twitter. The Twitter handle is, naturally, @MarkMonteith. I'll be back next week with Orlando Johnson's story right here on 1070 The Fan and 107.5 FM.